This is number 0069, the Stuff Fire program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, once again, this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0069. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Ian Usher. He's the man who sold his life on eBay, and now he's written a book about it called A Life Sold. Since then, his world travels have taught him a lot about people and brought him some new friends.
Because of the publicity I had from the eBay auction, I had so many invites to stay with people at various locations around the world. And it's so uplifting to get that much help from that many wonderful people.
David Bickle is the author of Creepiosity, a hilarious guide to the unintentionally creepy. What does he find creepy?
Popeye is creepy to me. Like things that, you know, you might at first glance go, well, that's not creepy. But then you think about it, like Popeye, every episode of Popeye was the same thing. Is Popeye had to rescue Olive Oil from being raped by Bluto. So that's creepy to me.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. And on this edition of Book Banter, I'll give a couple of Christmas gift suggestions that will look good on a coffee table as well as on the bookshelf. Plus some of my favorite books of 2010. All this coming up shortly on the Stuff File program.
And, of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0069, is Bruno Lavoie, who is a photojournalist at Global News here in Montreal, that other place that I work. And Bruno is also an all-around nice guy. Thank you very much, Bruno, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? We go all the way to Germany for our first story. A small-town German butcher said he faces steep bills after a wild boar tore through his shop in an hour-long rampage, but will at least recover some of his losses by selling slices of the slain beast. The boar wandered out of a nearby forest and into the shop and caused about 5,000 euros in damage before being shot by a local hunter, according to butcher Rainer Kramer. Insurance covers theft and fire, but the butcher shop isn't covered for a wild boar attack, said Kramer. Well, he needs to get a better policy, I guess. Anyway, Kramer's shop is in the town near the western city of Koblenz. The 290-pound boar will only fetch about 400 euros in ham and wurst sales after Kramer finishes carving it up. There was only one customer in the store during the attack who escaped with only a minor injury. Once the boar pushed through the door, I quickly helped the customer out of the store and then went to try and guard the production equipment, said Kramer. He and a sales clerk were unhurt in the rampage, but unable to stop the boar. I think the animal was heard to say, "Dad? Dad, are you here someplace? Dad?" On to our next story, and you know if you listen to the show long enough, you know we love our truck spills. Here's the latest one. It takes place in the Los Angeles area. Mark Leon lives in a sweet spot for big rigs in Los Angeles County. Now, 9 years after a truck hauling chocolate syrup crashed into his mobile home park, another rig hauling 36,000 pounds of whipped cream and sour cream, gee, do you see a pattern here, crashed just feet from his house. Authorities say the truck, driven by an unlicensed 16-year-old, was stopped by a stand of trees and a chain-link fence just off Interstate 210. Three people had minor injuries. The California Highway Patrol says the 16-year-old fell asleep and lost control of the big rig that toppled down an embankment. Investigators say the teen's 20-year-old brother got tired and asked for driving help. Two cousins, aged 3 and 13, were also in the truck. Okay. You're 16 and unlicensed, which means you probably don't get to drive anything, let alone a truck, too often. Wouldn't that thrill alone keep you awake? How drowsy could this 16-year-old have been? He and his brother sound like a family of narcoleptics. Anyway, moving right along. This may be the only time you hear these words put together in the same sentence. Are you ready? In St. Joseph's, Missouri, a home was completely destroyed by fire after a man was smoking a cigarette while working on his lawnmower in his bedroom. Told ya. The combination sparked a fire that heavily damaged the house and sent the man to the hospital, though his injuries were not considered life-threatening. Or, as Jeff Foxworthy used to say, if you ever find yourself smoking a cigarette while working on your lawnmower in your bedroom, you might be a redneck. Moving right along, in Wayne, New Jersey, 34-year-old hospital pharmacy manager Leonardo Zopa was suddenly summoned to a meeting with the hospital security director. He arrived noticeably nervous, inquired about the agenda, and eventually broke down and confessed that it was he who had set up that security surveillance camera in the men's restroom and that he has a problem. And I'm doing air quotes when I say a problem. Well, Leonardo should have kept his mouth shut. The security director said he was completely taken aback because the only purpose for the meeting was to advise Zopa of routine security code changes. Wow, that was an easy nut to crack. This is a guy who would never make it as a spy. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest. Want to know what's worse than a drunk driver? That would be a drunk driver who was also blind and then shows up drunk at his court hearing. 41-year-old Mark Allen Watson of Bartlesville, Washington, allegedly fell on his face in front of Judge Russell Vaclau. Judge Vaclau had just asked Watson to approach the bench when he reportedly stood up and paused before collapsing, striking his head on the jury box on the way down. Huh, that's going to leave a mark. The judge asked, "Are you intoxicated?" Watson replied, "No, I'm blind." The judge asked a Washington County Sheriff's Office deputy to administer a field sobriety test, but Watson said he couldn't take the test because he was blind. Instead, he agreed to take a breathalyzer test, which, of course, he failed. He was originally arrested after allegedly colliding with another car in Bartlesville and then driving off in the early hours of the morning. When asked at that time to take a field sobriety test, Watson reportedly declined, saying, "I'm bleeping drunk. I'm blind anyways, and I can't drive." Well, that last part is clearly true. As police were placing him in the back of the squad car, he allegedly yelled profanities and kicked one of the officers in the knee. Stay classy, Mark Allen Watson. Stay classy. Yes. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Back in 2008, Ian Usher literally sold his whole life on eBay. Everything was up for grabs, his house, belongings, friends, and even his job. From that experience, he has written a book called A Life Sold. Ian joins us through the modern technology of Skype-to-Skype communications. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Fine. Nice to talk to you once again. We had you on the old radio program at the time when you were first selling your life on eBay. We should check this out geographically. Right now, you're in Canada on the West Coast in British Columbia, correct?
I'm further north than that. I'm in Yukon Territory in Whitehorse.
You're in Whitehorse, Yukon Territory. Yes. Okay, well, we'll find out how you ended up there. But when we first spoke to you, you were in you were in Australia?
That's right. I lived on the West Coast in Perth in Australia.
And that's when you were selling your life on eBay.
Yes, it had an unfortunate start, the story. I separated from my wife and I found myself owner of a house and all the contents that we were supposed to be sharing together. And I decided it was time to move on and put the whole package up for sale as one big auction on eBay in an effort to move on and make a fresh start.
Okay, so you did that. You sold your life on eBay for... what did you get for it, by the way, for your life?
Well, the final bid was just under 400,000 Australian dollars, which was around the value of the house. The sale didn't quite end up as I hoped, and the buyer fell out. But ultimately, I did sell the house, got rid of pretty much everything, and freed myself up to make a fresh start.
Now, the second time we spoke to you on the air, were you not in, if I'm not mistaken, Hong Kong?
I was. I did a lot of traveling after I sold my life. A lot of people said, "Well, what will you do next?" And the thing that always came to mind is, "Well, I'll do whatever it is that I fancy next." So I started making a list of goals, and I traveled the world for 2 years. I made a list of 100 goals. I set myself a target time frame of 100 weeks, And I set off and traveled the world for 2 years doing all the things I've ever wanted to do.
Almost like a bucket list, as it were.
Indeed, yes. I've always had lists of goals and lists of things that I wanted to do. And I had around 100 on this list, and I looked at what I'd achieved. And in the previous 5 years, I ticked about 5 things off. And I thought, well, the maths really doesn't add up. I'm not going to finish the list before my time runs out. So I thought I really better get a move on.
Okay, so let's move forward to an earlier question. As you mentioned, you're now in Whitehorse in the Yukon Territory here in Canada. How did you end up there?
Well, I guess an unwritten subtext to my journey was perhaps a search for a new partner in my life, a new love in my life. And that did happen. On my travels, I met someone who, she first invited me here up to the Yukon to try out dog sledding, which was one of the goals on the list. And we hit it off. And then we met up again about 15 months later, further down the road in my travels, and really got on great. And that has resulted in me moving up here and starting a new life and a new family.
So how long have you been in Whitehorse?
It's coming up to 5 months now. I'll be here until just after Christmas. And then I think the cold weather's going to drive me south. It really is bitterly cold up here. I've never experienced anything like this. It was minus 25 centigrade just the other day, which is shockingly cold.
Welcome to Canada.
Thank you.
So tell me about the book now. You're writing this book, A Life Sold, which has just been published.
That's right. It's just been published. It's A Life Sold, and it's subtitled, Whatever Happened to That Guy Who Sold His Whole Life on eBay? And it basically tells the story of what prompted me to put my life upon it on eBay. There's a sort of, you know, the background, the growing up and what led me to move to Australia with my wife and so on. And then that's sort of the introduction, really, is the eBay sale. And then it launches into a telling of the 2 years of travel and the challenges and pitfalls and pleasures of trying to achieve all these goals. It really is quite an adventure and has this uplifting conclusion of finding this new love in my life and just sort of proving that if you put yourself out there, it's amazing what happens.
By the way, you mentioned moving to Australia. You're originally from the UK, correct?
That's right. I was born and raised in England. I lived in Australia for 7 years. My wife and I moved out there shortly after we were married, and we had 5 great years in Australia before things took a downward turn for us there, unfortunately.
So with all of the media attention, the eBay sale, the book that you now got out, have you been in contact with your ex-wife? What does she think of all of this?
It's been a while since I spoke to her, but I will be meeting up with her again very shortly. We're invited to a friend's wedding in New Zealand. I'm going to be in New Zealand in January and February. And I know that she's going. So this will be the first time I've seen her in over 2 years, I think. All we've done in between is we've sort of sent a happy birthday message and a Merry Christmas type of thing, and that's it.
But she is aware of all you've done since then. I mean, the life on eBay, the traveling.
It would have been hard for her to avoid it, particularly the eBay thing. There was so much press worldwide and people wanted comments from her. So she did know about that. One of her rather succinct comments was, it all sounds a bit mental to me at the time. But she was interested and sort of quite intrigued to see what would happen.
Now, in going through all this, I mean, you get this bright idea, this brilliant idea to put your life on eBay. I'm sure you... Or maybe you didn't. I don't know if you thought this whole thing through as to what was going to happen and how it was going to play out. As you look back at it, especially reflecting with your book, A Life Sold, what were the biggest pitfalls, misconceptions, and what were the biggest surprises on the plus side in going through this experience?
Well, it's interesting that you say I may or may not have planned it out. This all very much has a flavor of making it up as I'm going along. So I did the eBay auction thing without knowing where that was going to lead. And that led on into the travel adventure. Pitfalls, I guess, traveling alone particularly can be very challenging. And setting yourself a challenging list of goals can lead to all sorts of problems and issues. I missed a couple of connecting flights and you get some very low times, I think, when you're traveling on your own. You have to really face up to the lows and find the strength within yourself to continue. But on the positive side, some of the achievements that I made and some of the goals I succeeded in were absolutely extraordinary. There were so many times that I achieved goals in ways that were either way beyond what I expected or completely different to how I expected they would turn out. And I really have had in the past 2 years some of the most amazing experiences of my life.
What would you say? What would you say the biggest experience has been in your travels?
One of the most amazing things I experienced was swimming with whales while I was in Japan. I swam with a mother humpback whale and calf, and they were perhaps 3 or 4 meters away in the water. And it's just extraordinary how big they are and how beautiful and just how calmly we all sort of swam around each other. That was incredible to see.
And how would you say this whole experience has affected you? And also, how would you say you've changed, if at all, by this experience?
I think it's given me a very positive outlook on how people are. I met so many people on my travels. And because of the publicity I had from the eBay auction, I had so many invites to stay with people at various locations around the world. And it's so uplifting to get that much help from that many wonderful people. I've made so many great new friends all over the world. And in terms of changes in myself, I wrote a little bit about this in the book. Towards the end of the book, I did, you know, a lot of sort of reflective thinking about where the trip has led me. I still feel pretty much the same person inside. I do have a much greater confidence in myself, in what I can achieve when I set my mind to it, and a much greater excitement now about the future with having met a new partner and with this renewed confidence and the excitement about the book coming out. I'm very much looking forward to the future now.
With all you've done in the last couple of years, can you see yourself as someone who, for lack of a better term, settles down?
I think I might find that difficult to do. I have certainly been bitten very severely by the travel bug. And as I say, I'm setting off for New Zealand next and a couple of months down there. And then I fancy Central America. And I think that the problem with travel is the more places you see, the more that you realize there is out to see out there. So I'm very fortunate that my partner Maureen, she's very adventurous and is keen to travel and see a lot of places. So I think it's going to work out well for us.
So where would you like to ideally call home? Or in your case, is home just the world?
At the moment, home is the world. Home has been Whitehorse here for the past 5 months, but pretty much wherever I unpack my rucksack and get stuff out, that very quickly becomes home. That's something I found as I was traveling. Is it's amazing how when you put your bag in a hostel, that becomes home, and you sort of head out into a new city, and the hostel where your rucksack is now your home. So, yeah, I like to think of the world as a sort of large home with a lot of possibilities and a lot of opportunities out there.
Now, I understand that the story of your life, not only do you have this book out, but you're under contract with Walt Disney Pictures?
That's right, yes. That happened very early on. I was contacted by several Hollywood producers when I started the eBay auction, and one of them followed up and he was in contact with Walt Disney, and yes, they bought an option. The initial option was for 18 months, and then they've just extended that back in May for a further 18 months. And I spoke just the other day to the producer, and he said, oh, we've really got to find time to speak. He said, I need to update you on the progress with the project. So it sounds like things may be happening. So who knows? Watch this space.
Well, A Life Sold is certainly an interesting life indeed. People can check out your website at www.ianusher.com. And Ian, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me on again, Peter. It's been great to sort of have you follow from the start and catch up as I was traveling and catch up at the end of the story too.
Ian Usher, author of A Life Sold. You can check out his website at ianusher.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0069, and you can find links to Ian's site and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the author of Creepiosity, a hilarious guide to the unintentionally creepy. Plus, Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter. And we have, of course, an idiot of the day, but lots more Stuff File news for you right here, right now. John D. Gilliland of Florida feels threatened by former Florida Gators quarterback Tim Tebow, President Barack Obama, and Jesus Christ, and has petitioned in court for a restraining order against all of them. I was trespassed from the Kangaroo gas station for saying Tebow sucks, he explained. Gilliland's court filing notes he believes all three defendants are in gangs or are flashing some kind of gang symbol at him. Not surprisingly, all three petitions were immediately denied. But Gilliland filed supplemental affidavits against Tebow and Obama to get the court to reconsider. So, apparently, Jesus is forgiven. How fitting. Although, of course, we all know Jesus was in a gang. Those disciples are so hardcore. Okay, Vladimir Frolov, age 50, came to Southern California from Russia to skydive in Paris, which is a popular jumping spot. He jumped and was not seen again. Search and rescue teams looked for 2 days without finding any sign of him. 2 months later, a farmer called police to report finding a body in a field. The man he found was wearing 2 undeployed parachutes. Here is the quote of the day, by the way. We haven't positively identified the remains, a Riverside County Sheriff's investigator said. But on the other hand, we're only missing 1 skydiver. Well, 1 that they know of, anyway. On to El Paso. A 50-year-old man was severely injured after El Paso County, Colorado sheriff deputies say he crashed his car into the home of his estranged wife, set the house on fire, and then barricaded himself inside. William Anthony Gooch was in critical condition in the burn unit at a Denver hospital. Deputy Teresa Murphy said Gooch slammed his car into the house on, yes, Great Smoky Avenue. His estranged wife fled and called 911. He was in the home for quite a while before he left through a window with a weapon, Murphy said. Now, last year, this is the second time this has happened, last year Gooch was arrested after a 6-hour standoff. That time he had a gun and was threatening suicide. No doubt the deputies hope the third try will be the charm. Elsewhere, Chicago police were summoned to check out an apparent drunk woman holding her 3-month-old daughter as if she had a football under her armpit. Officers say Jamie L. Riley, age 27, was indeed drunk. Riley told them that she had been drinking vodka, celebrating with my husband because DCFS dropped their investigation. The city's Department of Children and Family Services confirmed they had been investigating the woman for, wait for it, child neglect. Riley was charged with endangering the health and life of a child and disorderly conduct. The infant who was injured in the incident was taken to hospital and into protective custody, and the DCFS has opened a new investigation. Now, for me, the telling part of this story isn't the second investigation, because that's a given. What is the telling part of the story for me is that the first investigation was closed out. Hopefully, this time around, they'll be a little more thorough. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, note to self, never call NASA Mission Control during a space shuttle launch and ask them if they have Prince Albert in a can. 22-year-old Nicholas Barbati is looking at 4 years in federal prison because he prank called a space shuttle launch. Now, 2 years ago, Barbati apparently thought prank calling the Coast Guard was funny. Ha, 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 ha. Well, he pled guilty to calling the Coast Guard on a secure line, claiming to be a lieutenant commander, and stating he could see a threat to space shuttle Endeavour 2 miles offshore. But he left federal court just last week with a clear understanding that hoax calls are no joke. His punishment was double what federal prosecutors had asked for, as the judge wanted to show this is no laughing matter. It took the Coast Guard and half a dozen other agencies 40 minutes to meticulously tear the threat apart and determine it was just a hoax. Barbati told the judge he never imagined himself in a jail jumpsuit, and he's trying to change as a person. Well, he's got 4 years to do that. His attorney says he was abused as a child and abandoned by both parents, pauvre bébé, as if somehow this should excuse his ridiculous behavior. Oh, just lock his ass up, and while he's in there, don't let him use a phone. How about that? Okay? On to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You know, some things are deliberately creepy, like serial killers, ghosts, or aliens, but others, like squirrels that look at you too long or non-blinkers, are unintentionally creepy. These are the kinds of things that catches the eye of comedy writer David Bickel. Now, he's the author of Creepiosity, a hilarious guide to the unintentionally creepy, and he's on the line with us from California. Hi, David.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So I don't know what's creepier, writing this book or the thought process which for you was, I've seen enough creepy things, I need to write this book.
Yeah, pretty much that. Yeah. The writing part was the easy one. The hard part is just observing the world around me going, wow, that's creepy. I don't like that. Yeah, that kind of thing.
So what kinds of things creep you out?
You know what? It's the kind of everyday stuff that is, you know, the most interesting to me. Like you said, aliens and ghosts and all that stuff, that doesn't appeal to me, but Popeye is creepy to me. Like things that, you know, you might at first glance go, well, that's not creepy, but then you think about it. Like Popeye, every episode of Popeye was the same thing, is Popeye had to rescue Olive Oil from being raped by Bluto. So that's creepy to me. So I thought, oh, that's a good thing for the book. And then it just, you know, just seeing, go to the mall and you see kids on a leash, that's creepy, and guys with really unrealistic dyed hair, creepy. It becomes like a thing where you just become hyper aware of it, to a point where I see everything. I look at the world through creepy colored glasses, if that's a real thing.
Well, full disclosure, I'm old enough to remember when more and more kids were on leashes,
really?
And I gotta admit, I was one of them. So there you go.
When did it stop, though? That's really, you know, over two, it's bad. If you're 11 on a leash,
yes,
you got problems.
That's true. That's true. Now, one of the things I understand, grown men in Boy Scout uniforms.
Absolutely. I say in context, when they're with other, you know, with the kids, in the kids' uniforms, I'll allow it. I'm not thrilled by it, but I'll allow it. But when you see them out of context, you see them, you know, at 7-Eleven or at a strip club or something, it's creepy.
Hmm. And I understand you don't like hairless cats as well.
No. See, don't put. I like. I don't. It's not that I don't like. I'm just creeped out by it.
Okay.
It's not a thing where I have feeling toward it. I happen to not like hairless cats. I'll give you that one. But they're very creepy. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, I have a thing where the Google will do the Google alert. And any article with my name in it or with the book name in it, they'll send me, you know, what's been posted. So I get one a few months ago, and it's the title of it is David Bickel is very unfunny, something like that. And I go click on it, and it's a group of people who have hairless cats. And they were so angry with me, they set up a whole message board about how much they hate me. And it was like, I have a hate group against me now. I have this whole entire hate group. And it felt bad inside, but it was kind of a sweet victory that people care.
How do you feel, and again, full disclosure, I have a sister who makes Raggedy Ann and Andy dolls.
Oh, boy.
And they're about the size of a five-year-old.
We really should change the subject. I don't want to. What else you got?
So how do you feel about...
The hair stood on the back of my neck when you said that, I swear.
How do you feel about large baby dolls?
Very creepy. You're creeping me out. Stop. It's early. Don't do that.
When you first started putting this book together, what was the reaction like when you told people? I mean, I know you're a comedy writer, a TV comedy writer, but when you started to put this book together and you're telling people what you were writing on, what was the reaction?
Pretty good. I mean, the good thing about it is it's stuff that people could all relate to. Like I said, even if it's stuff that you don't think about too often, you know, hey, that candy that your grandma has is usually creepy. You know, that kind of thing. People go, oh, yeah, and they could relate to it. So as soon as I went out with the idea and I told my friends and family, I would get emails and calls from people all the time going, hey, what about this? And they had, you know, generally very good ideas, and I put a whole bunch of them in the book.
So you've been getting a lot of suggestions from people.
Well, now, more than ever, now that the book's out, we have this great Facebook page and a great website, people are sending in their things all the time. I get, you know, random emails every day, and people are really funny, which is great. And I do, you know, these radio shows where people call in, and they're, you know, 8 out of 10, they nail it.
You know, it's funny, you talk about grandma's candy, and that reminds me of something that I always thought was terribly creepy. And luckily, I don't have a lot of advertising on this show, so I'm not going to lose a client here. But growing up, I was just creeped out by the grandfather in the Werther's candy commercial. I just thought there's something unsavory about that guy with all the candy he gives to kids. I just...
Right. What's your end game there, Pop?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That just creeped me out a bit.
It's not candy, it's bait. Yeah, we don't like that.
Now, you also have a website which has a lot of interesting stuff on it. Do you get people sending in stuff as well on the website now that the book is out?
All the time. People are sending in great stuff. We do polls. We're now doing a thing with we're doing like a Final Four kind of situation of the creepiest songs of the 70s. You know how they had all those like creep, like Cats in the Cradle and Seasons in the Sun. Like, and we do like a survey, and then we narrowed it down to the top four now, and we're gonna find out by the end of the year what's the creepiest song of the 70s, which is great.
Okay, so what's in the running? I don't like this.
I think the last four. It was Cats in the Cradle, Claire. Remember Claire?
Yes.
I think the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. I don't remember the fourth one. But if they go on the website, you just go, you take a look, and it's there. You can go back and see. And there's one Timothy. Remember Timothy about a miner?
Yes.
Then he gets and they eat him. They get trapped in a mine and they eat him. That's a great song to dance to, by the way.
Which,
a song about cannibalism.
Which reminds me, I understand, because here you're talking about popular songs about tragedies. For obvious reasons, I guess you don't like nursery rhymes either.
Okay, again with the not liking. It's not that I don't like it. It's just that scientifically proven to be creepy. Nursery rhymes.
Okay, I understand.
Ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies, ashes. It's about like the Black Plague or something. It's horrible. Why do we do this to our kids? What kind of monsters are we? Tell nice things to the kids.
Okay, so not like, but you find creepy. I understand. There's
yes.
Certainly,
exactly.
Certainly a difference. You find Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood creepy?
It's in the book. And I know the guy who was like the nicest guy in the world, but if you watch that show, or if you remember that show, and I get a lot of people who get mad at me for saying it,
but I get just as many people going, yeah, that was creepy. He goes, first of all, he takes off clothes and puts clothes on in front of the camera. Strange. That's a strange thing. Then they go into that, like, fantasy world on that little choo-choo train, and they got those puppets who don't have moving mouths. They just bob their heads to talk. And one of them just keeps going meow. It's like meow, 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 meow. It's just a night. It's like, did I dream that? It's a horror. And it was on for 30 years, by the way.
Yes.
Big success.
So has this book now turned into, I mean, with the website and everything else, has this turned into a little cottage industry for you?
It's, you know what, I'm you know, working on stuff now to kind of branch it out a little bit. But yeah, we're kind of, it's become like a little bit of a brand name. You once in a while people see people do a thing online where they go, this is a creepiosity. Like, it's become a word, which is kind of cool because it's just a word I actually just made up. But it's become kind of a thing where people just use it as a word to describe things that are unintentionally creepy, which is great.
And in your day job, because you do have a day job I alluded to earlier, you are a comedy writer. You've worked on television shows like King of Queens. You've got other shows in development. I know you can't go into detail about that because you can't. But do you find that you find some things in your day job that might be classified as somewhat creepy?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I could write a whole other book about, you know, writing on TV and some of the people, especially that you run across. But generally, it's just everywhere you look. It's, you know, like one of the exercises I did when I started writing the book is I would just think of a topic, and I would just think of like a movie, and I would just, and I come up with 10 things when you go to the movies. Like if you go to the movie theater and it's empty and somebody sits next to you, it's creepy. So you can always find, you know, things wherever you look. I mean, now that it's in your head, you'll think of it too. I kind of like open that world to you, I think.
Oh, you don't have to scare me about the movie theaters. I worked as a kid in movie theaters for 6 years. I've seen creepy.
You're probably sick of popcorn, huh?
You know, I've never purchased popcorn in the theater in my entire life.
Wow. Is that because of that experience?
No, I used to make it all the time and I could eat it, but I was never a popcorn person per se.
Wow.
Anyway, the book is a lot of fun. It's called Creepiosity, A Hilarious Guide to the Unintentionally Creepy. People should check out the website as well. And David, I thank you very, very much.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
David Bickel, author of Creepiosity, A Hilarious Guide to the Unintentionally Creepy. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0069, and you'll find links to David's site and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones. One of the great things about celebrating the holidays nowadays is that you can have all of your favorite holiday music with you wherever you are. Because of devices like the iPod, listening to Jingle Bells when you shop, work, or do anything has never been easier. These devices are amazing, so when I heard about an outrageous lawsuit against Apple, the most successful company that makes these personal music devices, it definitely was not music to my ears. The lawsuit was filed by the New York City Retirement System. The pension system owned stock in Apple and wasn't happy with the return on its investment, even though the value of Apple's stock had risen 600% in the 2 years before the lawsuit. Let's be fair, lawsuits like this can drag on for years and cost all of us. Even though a judge dismissed this lawsuit, the pension system appealed. And to avoid more legal bills, Apple offered to settle this ridiculous case for millions of dollars. My question is, how much will this add to the cost of our next iPods? Learn more. Go to my website at bobdirigojones.com.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up?
If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Stuart Nolman with the holiday edition of Book Banter. Ho, 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 Stuart.
Oh, yes, and ho, ho, ho to you too, Peter. And if you expect me to break into any song now, you're absolutely mistaken, because there's a whole huge canon of Christmas songs that I could have sung. But my Bing Crosby is not that good these days. So.
I thought at the very least you would have broken into the dreidel song for a Hanukkah that just went by.
Oh, yeah, I would have. But the thing is, I didn't get any latkes this year. So,
oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, and the thing is, there's not that many Hanukkah songs. I mean, maybe two or three, but Christmas songs galore.
Yes, there are. Yes. Anyway, what do we have to discuss on this holiday edition of the Stuff File program's Book Banter?
Well, while I'm sitting here by the hearth with the open fire roaring in the fireplace, I've got a couple of good gift suggestions for you in case you got some last minute ideas. You're stuck for a last minute gift idea and books, always make great gifts. You have to admit.
Yep.
And shortly, I'm going to give a couple of my selections of my favorite books of 2010 that could also be good gift suggestions as well.
Go ahead.
So let's get started, Peter.
Yep.
Peanuts, very famous comic strip, and I mean everyone knows about that. And now, believe it or not, Charles Schulz's comic strip played a role in my early life. You see, if you remember, Fawcett Books had these collection of paperbacks of Peanuts strips that sold for 50 cents each. Those were the first books that I bought on my own, actually. And also, I never missed Charlie Brown Christmas since 1970. And on TV. And also, when I was a camper at Camp Pembina back in 1974, our unit of production was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I was one of the three Charlie Browns. Although I auditioned for the role of Linus originally. Yeah, it's amazing. But, and now this year, Peanuts is commemorating its 60th anniversary. Yes, it's been 60 years since Charles Schulz started the strip. It started with 7 newspapers. And in the time of his death, it went to 2,600 newspapers. And there's a fitting tribute to the strip, its characters, and the enormous popularity with adults and children alike. It's been in the form of a book called The Peanuts Collection. This is a slipcased hardcover book that explains quite simply and vividly the Peanuts phenomenon, from the evolution of its major characters like Charlie Brown and Snoopy, to the Great Pumpkin, the award-winning TV specials, its role in professional sports and the space race, the music, the movies, the stage productions, and of course, the legacy of Charles Schulz and the strip, thanks to the Charles M. Schulz Museum, which opened in Santa Rosa, California back in 2002. That's where Schulz lived for most of his life. And thankfully, the author, Nat Gertler, had unprecedented access to the Schulz archives and features pull-out reproductions of several Peanuts items, merchandise, memorabilia, and publications that haven't been seen by the public since they first appeared. Like the pamphlet that was published for buyers of the Ford Falcon automobile in the early 60s, see the Peanuts characters in a major ad campaign and contributed to having the Falcon one of Ford's best-selling models before the Mustang came around, actually. A reproduction of the actual decals from the Apollo 10 mission in 1969 when the Lunar and Command modules were named after Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And even the 1967 program book for the original New York stage production of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which starred a young Gary Berghoff in his pre-MASH days, actually. But from the kite-eating tree to Snoopy's ongoing battle with the Red Baron to the little redhead girl to Charlie Brown's futile attempts to kick the football, The Peanuts Collection is a book that is a must-have for anyone who read, appreciated, and grew up with the laugh-out-loud humor and heartwarming wisdom of Charles M. Schulz's masterful, enduring contribution to popular culture through a comic strip that he drew, which, when he put it out, he originally hoped would sell newspapers.
You know, you mentioned Gary Berghoff. It's a very interesting point that they tried to find a way to get around a physical deformity that Gary Berghoff has when he was playing that role. And the simple way of getting around it was a baseball glove.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No, I got to check the pictures in the book, and he's wearing the baseball glove.
If you've noticed, for that very reason, all the years on MASH, you never saw both of Gary Berghoff's hands. He always had a clipboard or a teddy bear or something. That's why in the stage play, Charlie Brown always wore the baseball glove.
Interesting. I got to check that out.
Yep.
Ah, nice little trivia. But if you would like the book, and it's and believe me, if you're a fan of the strip, you're going to love it. It's called The Penis Collection by Nat Gertler. It's published by Little Brown, and it's $43.
Excellent.
And if you like rock and roll, classic rock and roll from the 70s, if you remember in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, a lot of the record companies went out of their way to promote their artists' albums, tours, everything from magazine ads to special promotional items, you know, mobiles, record stands, even the laminated passes that you were that if your friend had them, you were the envy. I mean, that was basically you envied that person. It was really a great age of rock and roll promotion. And there's this gentleman, he's a Broadway director. His name was Rob Roth. He had an obsession with classic rock and roll of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And he loved these promotional items. And he has collected them over throughout his lifetime and has 3,500 separate items of these rock and roll memorabilia. And he put this all into a beautiful hardcover book called The Art of Classic Rock. He looks at 8 of his favorite rock and roll performers, Queen, Led Zeppelin, Elton John, the Rolling Stones, and goes through the history of the groups and the singers through their memorabilia, through all their ads, through all the record covers, throughout the world, tour posters. It's amazing what he has in there. I mean, some of them I even remember when I was younger. Tour programs. One of my favorite is from promoting Led Zeppelin's first album in 1969. And from Atlantic Records, put up this ad in like Rolling Stone and Cream magazine and Cashbox. And I love what it says. It says Led Zeppelin 1 available on Atlantic Ampex tape, 8-4 and 8-track cassette cartridges, albums, and cassette tapes.
What are those?
Yeah, exactly. I sort of laughed out loud when I saw it. Oh my god! And you had choice and variety back then, but I remember the Ampex reel to reels. I mean, hard to believe, but when you look through this, it's just amazing. You know what? How these record companies went all out to get people to buy the records.
Yep.
I mean, if you remember, if you go into record stores in the 70s, the mobiles and the huge posters. I mean, this brings back a lot of great memories of when we worshipped such superstar singers and groups like Led Zeppelin and David Bowie and Queen and the Rolling Stones and Elton John. I mean, we don't get that anymore. It just brings back a great, fond memories of appreciating rock and roll in the 70s and 80s. And what a wonderful book. It's all it's full color, and it's just called The Art of Classic Rock. It's by Paul Grushkin. It's using the collection of Rob Roth, and it's with a preface by Alice Cooper and an afterword by Elton John.
Excellent. We just have about a minute, so do you have a favorite book from, now that we've gone through the year, do you have a favorite book from 2010?
Well, there's The Help by Catherine Stockton, which is a novel that should be read. It's based on a true story of an untold story of the civil rights movement in Mississippi in 1962 when several domestics were fighting for their civil rights. And also, I still recommend Stieg Larsson's The Millennium Trilogy, which is soon to be a movie with Daniel Craig. That I basically call it How I Spent My Summer Vacation. I spent the whole summer reading the three books, and the mystery is not over yet. It's still alive and well, and even though Larsson's has been gone for about 6 years, the books live on, and they still merit a test of time. And also, Mordecai Richler, the biography called Mordecai, the Life and Times by Charles Foran, great book. If you like Dudley Kravitz and Solomon Gursky Was Here and Barney's Version, terrific book. This is a book I'm saving, and it will be a part of a future review on Book Banter here.
Okay. And I'm going to mention one that you reviewed earlier this year that I enjoyed in 2010, Dennis Palumbo's Mirror Image.
Yes, and who's, like I said, the mystery is still alive and well, and the people like Stieg Larsson and Dennis Palumbo really hold it up to future generations of mystery fans.
A new Daniel Rinaldi mystery, and I look forward to future ones from him as well. Best of the holidays to you, sir. How can people get in contact with you? Where can they find you?
Well, Peter, they can always go to www.westendtimes.ca, and you can see my column every week. And the happy holidays to all the listeners, and happy holidays to you too, Peter.
Thank you very much, sir. Stuart Nolman and Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch with this edition of the Stuff File program. We'll get to our idiot of the day in just a matter of moments. But first, some more Stuff File news. A woman went to a grocery store in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and purchased 42 bottles and cans of soda. She charged them to her Bridge card, which is a federally funded debit card that's managed by the state for use by public assistance recipients. She then took her purchase directly to the store's automated redemption machine and fed all 42 containers, unopened, into the machine. Inside, they all exploded as they were crushed, spreading soda and debris inside the machine and all over the surrounding floor. She then pocketed $4.20 for the returns and left. Store manager Steve Holland said he called the state and was told the customer did not violate Bridge card rules. Wow, you know, it would have been just easier for her to go on the street and sell the stuff for half the retail price, and she would have made more money and not damaged a machine, but I digress. Elsewhere, a Winslow, Maine woman was indicted on charges of theft and deception and aggravated forgery for fraudulently obtaining food stamps. Now, according to the indictment, Leah L. Wright, age 34, falsely stated that she was pregnant for 40 months straight, and forged statements from physicians and state agencies to verify her condition. Assistant Attorney General Leanne Robin said Wright had received about $4,000 in benefits. Two notes from separate agencies show one pregnancy followed another by one day. Wow, someone in the welfare department needs a refresher course in sex education. And Philip Ransom didn't quite make it home from work. His van broke down just about a block from his Kansas City, Missouri home. It sat there, backfiring, and then a squad car pulled up, called in to investigate, shots fired in the area. When the officer heard the loud pops of Ransom's van backfiring, they returned fire, shooting at Ransom, who stood by his van, his hands in the air, yelling that he was unarmed. "I wasn't counting the shots," he said, "but it sounded like a lot. None hit him, but three did hit the van." The two officers, who were so panicked that they also shot out their own windshield, were put on administrative leave. Wow, let's hope these guys don't spend their time off doing target practice. Or maybe, on second thought, they should, because clearly they don't have that good an aim. You know, I almost made those two clowns the idiot of the day, but I didn't, because this is...
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Steve Dragon of Chicago, Illinois, called 911 to report that something had been stolen from the trunk of his car. But investigators already knew about it. They had confiscated Dragon's cargo themselves after distracting him on a fake traffic stop. It was cocaine in the car, by the way. Police watched Dragon, an alleged gang member, as he returned to his car and saw him running and pacing in the area in a frantic manner while appearing to talk on his cellular phone. Dragon's phone, by the way, had been tapped, and they wanted to see if he would call his boss to report the missing drugs so they could learn just who his boss was. But no, instead this guy decided to call 911 because cocaine was stolen from his car. Now why? Why would this criminal mastermind decide to call 911 for cocaine in the trunk of his car that had gone awry? Well, one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0069. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And at the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0069. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder. And on Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, aboard Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, Gold FM in Singapore, and WSTJ St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.